listening to the Mental Ideas Podcast, the only radio show where the lunatics are fully licensed to take over the asylum. I'm Sadie Kay, and so am I. Coming up... Depression. We all know it's no laughing matter. Or is it? Cartoonist Larry Fine stuns by proving that after all this time, he's still alive and living on Lantau. Larry Fine is an award-winning cartoonist and writer. He was the first cartoonist to have a full-page spread in Time magazine. Worked in animation for Walt Disney Studios and is the international best-selling author of 14 books. So, Larry, tell me about your mother.
Once upon a time, my mother expected me to be a doctor. When I was 3 years old, she started piling me up with books about Dr. Albert Schweitzer and Florence Nightingale, thinking that she's going to influence me to be a doctor. What ended up happening is I fell in love with the books. And so from a very early age, I would sit in my room and just draw pictures.
All about medical subjects?
No, nothing. In fact, I mean, this is funny. I mean, it sounds like a joke, but it's real. When I was 10 years old, I saw my mother sitting in the living room, and I said, "Mom, I don't need to be a doctor." And without skipping a beat, she said, "All right, a lawyer then." I'm not making this up. I mean, the other thing my parents did was isolate me from the other kids in the neighborhood.
Why?
Because I was their little genius, they thought. Later IQ tests proved they were wrong. And then I was always the kid in class who would sit in the back of the class, you know, scribbling in my notebook instead of looking at the teacher. It didn't mean I wasn't absorbing things, but I didn't need to take notes because I was a good learner. Now, everyone at this school was a so-called little genius, so I was around people my age. When they transferred me into the government school system, everyone else in the class was 12. When you're 10 with 12-year-olds in the same class, you're guaranteed to be beat up. And I was. So I really retreated into my own world. And that's when I started really drawing cartoons as my way of coping. So some teacher was picking on me, then he would suffer horrible violence in these cartoons. I did have a friend in high school. He also was sort of an outcast. So we got together and we produced an underground newspaper. The paper was called The Toilet Paper. The New York Times slogan was "All the news that's fit to print." Ours was The Toilet Paper, "All the news that's shit to print." And it was, of course, very popular. One day, one of the coaches caught me giving them out. He grabbed me, pulled me to the headmaster's office. I was expelled. My mother told me I had ruined her life. It wasn't about me. It was about her. She came into the headmaster's office, got on her knees, and begged him to not expel me.
Did it work?
He wouldn't put up with it. He expelled me. Oh. And I was sent to what's called a continuation school, where they sent kids with criminal records.
This is for doing cartoons.
This is for doing cartoons. And so this was the first time that cartoons got me into really big trouble.
Why are so many of our favorite comedians depressed?
Most of the ones that I've met all have this very similar background of feeling like
outsiders.
An outcast or an outsider as a child. I've met many, many, many cartoonists and humor writers over the years. Everybody was not only the kid in the back of the class drawing pictures, they were also the last one to be chosen for sports. We didn't draw pictures because we thought, oh, how nice, I'm going to draw pictures and be an artist. No, cartoons and humor was that catharsis, that way of getting back. You can say, why are so many of these comedians depressed or angry? It's because that's what feeds them. There's a lot of different kinds of humor. And I think the ones that I like the best are the ones who speak from anger or depression or disappointment. You know, everyone's been rejected in a relationship, for example.
I just don't like men who are shorter than me.
They're not talking about the happy side of relationships. What they're showing is the things that deep down irritate us.
Will you call it little?
My wife's a psychologist. She's been trying to cure me.
I was going to get onto this.
For as long as we've been married.
Your mum must have been happy that you at least have one doctor in the family now.
So you marry a doctor. One, you have a dependable income to rely on. And two, you can satisfy your mother.
So how did you guys meet?
Thanks to cartoons. I was offered a job drawing caricatures in a tourist shopping mall. Well, there was this cute new girl came to work there one day. She was from Hong Kong, and we've been married now for 36 years. So we came to Hong Kong, and I fell in love with the place at first sight. I can't tell you why. I just felt so at home here. It was weird. I was in this kind of twilight zone where I was married into this working-class Chinese family, but my Cantonese was very basic. But hanging out with them, I would learn some of their kind of misconceptions about foreigners, which were often hilarious. You know, they're saying, you know, foreigners, they're so short-tempered because they eat so much meat.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, what are Chinese? They have pork in everything. And they're talking about Westerners eating too much meat. I thought, oh, that's funny. On the other hand, here I was, a white guy in Hong Kong, and the other expatriates I was meeting were lawyers, and I was just not part of that world. I was on a minivan one day, and you only have to take the minivan two or three times to understand that when you want to get off, you say, Yao Lo. So here was this English woman who kept telling the driver, stop, please. I'd like to get off here, please. Finally, someone yelled out, Yao Lo, and the driver stopped. And she said, some people are just too stupid to learn a simple word in another language. What this woman did offended me. And yet it was so offensive that it was funny. This is how I made my career in Hong Kong for the next many, many years. Observing the things that made me angry in a bemused way. So anyway, I did this for about a year and then I started running out of ideas. And these characters kept reappearing in the strip. So I came up with Lily Wong being chased by this Guaylo guy. I ended up at the Hong Kong Standard doing these cartoons.
What do you reckon it is about depression and anger that inspires funny writing, cartoons, and performances?
I think people laugh at these really hard-hitting cartoons or stand-up comedians because it's expressing things that they're afraid to say themselves. Because I don't just write them for entertainment. I'm trying to encourage critical thinking. The thing is, I mean, here's where it becomes unhealthy. I would cultivate my anger. Anger, despair, depression, to me, it's all kind of related. Not wanting to accept the world the way it is. Where it got dangerous is that I was able to cultivate it and channel it into this
creativity.
Now, in 1995, I was fired. After dinner one day, I got a fax saying I was fired with immediate effect. How it affected me personally is it took me off my soapbox. I no longer had this outlet. And I got really ill.
Depressed.
I got depressed. And I had not a penny's worth of work. My wife was supporting the family. And the Independent in Britain commissioned me to do cartoons about Hong Kong's last 100 days under British rule.
Yeah.
The editor thought it was so good, he flew me out to London to meet him. He'd like to offer you a permanent position as the cartoonist for the Independent. I said, okay. I told my wife, I said, you know, you'd have to give up your practice. But she supported it because she could see how miserable I was. A couple weeks before we're supposed to leave, the editor phoned me up and said, Larry, I hope you haven't packed the furniture.
Oh, no.
I said, I have, as a matter of fact. He said, I've just been sacked.
Was he fired by fax?
Any contract that I signed in the last 6 months has been declared null and void. I'm afraid that your contract's been canceled. This was Andrew Marr, who's now on BBC. I really liked him.
That's so cool. I liked him too.
He went on to do better things. Right? But we decided to go anyway. And it was really tough. Really, really tough. And that anger couldn't be channeled. But the anger just got worse. After I'd been in London for about 6 months, I was walking around bringing my portfolio from one magazine office to another. And I was with my son. So we were taking a shortcut through Hyde Park. And as we were walking through this one muddy patch, my knees gave out and I just fell down into the mud on my back, kicking my feet, flailing my arms, screaming at the top of my lungs. I was having a nervous breakdown. And the shame I felt and the pressure I felt, it just all came to a head and I just collapsed. And it was a very strange experience in that I had sort of a, not so much an out-of-body experience, but I felt as if a spirit came out of my body and flew away. And after that, I didn't want to do cartoons anymore. Something I had done since I was 3 years old. It was part of my DNA.
Yeah.
It up and left. But then when I was doing the animation, there were times I thought, oh, I feel like, you know, designing some of the characters. And I'd sit down and start to draw. My hand would start shaking. I'd feel nauseous.
Wow.
I literally, and I'd get headaches. Symptoms. I had this physical reaction against drawing.
Do you really believe that a spirit left your body?
I don't know. I think maybe it's a mental thing because it just hurt too much to draw. I mean, I was really, really, really low. Back in London, what saved me, I joined a Buddhist temple. And that kept me sane. That's what I think saved me from
suicide,
from doing something drastic. And that's when my luck started to change again.
And now you write fart books?
Yeah, the Fart Brothers. It's again, it's letting it out, this constant well of anger. When it comes down to it, humor has a lot of violence built into it, whether it's violent emotions, violent feelings, deep depression or despair, or just silly, light violence. I wondered about great humorists who've committed suicide, like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
He was starting to suffer from Parkinson's. And so I immediately imagined, from what I know of him, you know, he was always on. He wasn't just funny when the camera was turned on. He had a lot of energy pent up in him that came out constantly. Suddenly he's not able to do it anymore. You know, so it's a double-edged sword. That depression, that anger can fuel the humor. When you're so used to doing it and the outlet closes off, that's when it becomes dangerous.
As a practicing Buddhist, what do you hope you'll come back as in your next life?
In my next life, I want to be a shoe salesman. I want to be someone who can just go to work, sell shoes to people, go home and kick back on the sofa, crack open a beer, watch the game. I don't want to have this creative, you know, drive.
I just want the next life.
My mother was right. Should have been a doctor instead of an artist.
Larry Fine, still a legend. You can read all about Larry's experience at a Buddhist temple in his memoir, The Fart Brothers. I've been Sadie Kay, and so have I.
Thanks very much to Sadie Kay for her wonderful feature. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's so quirky and funny. Hope you did as well. And there'll be more coming up next Thursday as well, and then the Thursdays to come. And if you want to know more about Sadie and about her charity and her podcast extras, you can also go to mentalideas.org.